Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and wherever you happen to be listening to us in this great big universe connected by the World Wide Web. We are the Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. John Morgel, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton, going at it for our 54th edition. Again, we're conference calling this one. Again, I had to work a little late this Sunday. Worked for Sunday Ticket as I saw the Houston Texans come back and defeat the Oakland Raiders 24-21. We'll talk a little bit about that earlier, later on today. But first up, I want to describe the Reinhardt game that I called yesterday. Saw that on ReinhardtEagles.com. Up in St. Andrews, Reinhardt defeats St. Andrews Knights 48-28. Big game in the Appalachian Division. Reinhardt just needs one more win, and that could come against Cincinnati Christian this coming Saturday to clinch the Appalachian Division, because they are 4-0 with two games left, 3 weeks on the schedule. There's an off game kind of sandwiched in between the Cincinnati Christian and the last game with Union. Again, 48-28, and Daniel, Treve Kane had an Abe Lincoln. And Daniel, be so kind as to tell Leon Brown what an Abe Lincoln is.
An Abe Lincoln?
Oh, come on. You know this.
Score.
You know this.
Oh, wow. He had a fourth score.
Yes.
He had a fourth score. Oh, wow. He had a fourth score.
Exactly. He had the four scores. That is an Abe. That is, when I mentioned an Abe Lincoln, Leon, that is what it means. An individual player with four touchdowns, and Treve Kane pulled that one off, three from minimal yards, two from 2 yards, one from 1 yard, and one from 55 yards. That was the first play of the third quarter when Reinhardt went into the break with a 17-14 lead, but they exploded in the third quarter and coasted to that 48-28. So if anyone says an Abe Lincoln, Leon, that's what we're talking about, four scores.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, it's, I was doing some research on Joey Galloway. Mm-hmm. And Joey Galloway is actually one of the few college players, wide receivers, actually put up four scores in a game on the collegiate level, as far as at the wide receiver.
Right. Right. Well, like I said, it doesn't happen very often. I think LJ Stegall might have had one for Reinhardt, but Treve Kane pulled off that feat, and it all sets up that matchup with Cincinnati Christian next week at Ken White Field for the championship of the Appalachian Division. One win, it's on it, or one loss from St. Andrews Point and Bluefield. If either one of those three things happen, again, you will get the Eagles winning the Appalachian Division. And also, Reinhardt 17th in the NAIA. Going into that game, they just need to move up to 16th to get the berth in the playoff rounds. That will probably happen in the next polling that will come out on Monday. So that is where we stand. Also, college level, not that much going on in terms of Georgia teams. Georgia and Georgia Tech both off. But congratulations to Georgia State. They won their fourth in a row, a huge victory over Troy. They hit the 50 mark against the Trojans. They are 6-2. They are bowl eligible, and they have a chance to – well, they're off next week, and they have a chance to really improve their positioning. Guys, they've got four games left. They could easily go 2-2, maybe even 3-1. And depending on that Appalachian State game in 3 weeks, they could even contend for the inaugural Sun Belt Conference Championship. So, again, I was in Florence, South Carolina. That's where we stayed. And, of course, the St. Andrews game was in Laurinburg, North Carolina. I listened to the Georgia State game all the way home, but, you know, kind of out of the loop. But, guys, I'm going to turn it over to you, what you guys were watching. And I guess the real story for Saturday is Kansas State's incredible victory over Oklahoma, and what does that do for the Big 12 and even the college football playoff?
Well, it impacts it a lot, guys. I'm sorry, Leon. It impacts it a lot. There were two top 10 teams that went down. Notre Dame was the other one, of course. Michigan pulled out probably the better performances I had seen in a long time from them, a performance that I knew that they could do. The Oklahoma loss was a bit more shocking. And it's funny because they are just hanging outside of the top 10 now. With the polls coming out today, they're ranked number 10. A lot of people thought that they should have been ranked ahead of Georgia because of Georgia's one loss. Going up against a Kansas State team that is a little bit better than South Carolina, number one. Number two, Oklahoma went on the road and lost that game. Jalen Hurts still had a very good game. Just the defense, man. The defense has hunted them this year, guys, and Hurts has been able to have to score at least 40 points a game just to get them over that hump. And it's going to hurt them a bit in the polls. And it did. That was a tough loss for them. Good game for Kansas State, though. There was something that happened at the end. There was an onside kick that was attempted by Oklahoma. He looks like it did ricochet off of a player, but when instant replay showed that it ricocheted off an Oklahoma player, it didn't look like it to me from one end. One end, it looked like it ricocheted off the Oklahoma player because it was recovered by Oklahoma.
Right.
But on another end, it looked like it was ricocheted off a Kansas State player, which would have made it a live football. And, of course, if that play would have upheld, then Oklahoma would have gotten the possession and gotten a chance. But good college football this weekend. Oklahoma taking a big shot and saw some top teams go down again for the third straight week. So, it's going to be interesting, Leon. What do you think?
That right there was a huge win for Michigan. You know, now it was, right? It's horrible in the situation that it's like no matter how much he washes his hands with big games like this, will they ever come clean?
Only if he beats Ohio State.
That part, John, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. He's going to move up in the poll.
Right.
You know, Iowa State. They're going to move up to the polls, but it's all like, okay, you do all this washing your hands. He's 5-0 at home, but you lost two games in a row. Two games you weren't supposed to lose. But at the end of the day, will you take care of those guys in Ohio? That's all that the people whose opinions really matter really care about. In the end, I mean, they really care about this win too. But at the end of the day, if he wants his hands to be clean, he has to beat the Buckeyes. Simple and plain.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think we've been preaching that all year long. And this was a big win for Harbaugh simply because of the fact that you look at the rest of the schedule. I mean, they had a gauntlet of a schedule coming up, especially when you went down to Wisconsin. And the Ohio State game is, of course, the game that you point at, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, the Harbaugh company had to get that game. And it's funny because when I looked at them, it was like Notre Dame just couldn't stop. There was a huge loss for Notre Dame, too. This is an independent team that, you know, of course, two losses still can get them into the college football playoff. But you lose to Georgia on the road and you lose to Michigan on the road. But here's the significance of those two losses, guys. Those have been on prime time. Those have been prime time games. And the committee is probably going to look at that and say, man, Notre Dame is having a hard time showing up against these top teams, these top-notch programs on a national stage in prime time. And that's what's going to hurt Notre Dame right there. I think, guys, that they're out of the college football playoff, I mean, without question. And even if they went out and teams continue to falter, I still don't think you can reward them back simply because, listen, they've lost some big-time games. And that loss to Michigan, which was 45-14, they weren't even in this ball game.
No, they weren't.
They never had a chance. Yeah, they never had a chance in this game, man. And it was hard to watch for Notre Dame, which is a very good team. They have a very good quarterback, very good defense. But they did not look good Saturday night. And they made Michigan look like a top 10 contending team, a team that I thought was going to make it to the college football playoff.
Right. You know what team, in my opinion, is also on the hot seat? And they're ranked a little better than Michigan. But, boy, it was I'm talking about Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If that right there was a good old-fashioned shootout. And if anything, for the teams who are about to play against Washington right now, they have all types of tape. There's the blueprint is out on how to be on how to be Oregon, and that's just, you know, through great quarterback plays. That quarterback that they have for Washington, he's going to. I could definitely see he's a that's a pro quarterback right there. That's a pro quarterback. That's a pro quarterback. That man was out there threading needles. He was unafraid. He was not afraid of the big moment. I mean, he really, if it wasn't, I mean, it really came down to who had the ball last.
Right.
Right.
You know, that was a good old-fashioned Saturday night, but I was very impressed with what Washington brought to the table. And if I'm Oregon right now, they need their secondary has been put on notice.
And going back to Michigan, guys, their last four games at Maryland, at home against Michigan State, at Indiana, and then they finish up at home. Leon, at home against Ohio State. This is a home game this year.
Oh, yes.
Noon game on Fox. Yeah, this is a home game this year. So you better believe that Harbaugh has to get out of here with this victory. He's got to get out of here with this win.
It's been rumored that he's been sending his resume out of pro teams.
Well,
yeah, it has been. I've seen that same rumor.
I was just going to bring that up, and in reference to a certain job that may be opening very close to where we are, to where we are taping, as the Atlanta Falcons laid another egg, even though they did rally at the end. But guys, that was against Seattle's second string defense. It's just that this team has apparently given up, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show, right, as we focus more on the college game, the big wins by Michigan, big wins by Kansas State, really knocking these things for a loop. Clemson, they had a big win against Boston College, but they dropped again in the polls. I think they're now fourth. And it looks like we're going to have some real good games in the next couple of weeks. We talked a little bit about it before we came on the air again. Georgia-Florida next week. You got Georgia-Florida. You've got the week after that, LSU-Alabama, and Minnesota-Penn State is also next week. But right now, the big game in the SEC East yesterday, I believe Missouri lost again. So now it's going back to that Georgia-Florida matchup to win the SEC East and, of course, face the winner of the Alabama-LSU game in the conference championship, which, again, is probably what we all expected going into the season.
Well, and simply because of the fact that with Auburn's loss to Florida, that kind of knocked them out of the SEC West. But, in the next 2 weeks, if we're going to see some good SEC play next week, I think the SEC East will be solved, like Leon has been preaching the entire season.
Right.
The Georgia-Florida game is the winner will be in the SEC championship representing the East. And the game in 2 weeks, which will be on Saturday night on CBS, we know that. This will be a number one versus number two matchup.
Yep.
LSU is ranked number one now, and rightfully so. I have been saying that since the Florida game. They should be number one. They, to me, look like the best team in college football when you look at it, especially yesterday because they had to grind it out on defense because Auburn's defense showed up yesterday.
Right.
They were able to calm Joe Burrow down, but Burrow made some throws. And you're talking about a guy that's NFL ready, guys. You was just talking about Easton over at Washington, Leon, but I think Joe Burrow's an NFL ready quarterback himself. He's running a post-style offense already. But he's made some good throws, and his receivers made some great catches. Just Coach Ed O, he's got that team steering in the right direction right now. And if they can get past, Bama and Nick Saban, I think this team is going to be tough to beat down the stretch.
And nobody really knew who Joe Burrow was at the start of the season. He's really made a name for himself. Started out with that shellacking of Vanderbilt, and really just kept going through this season. He's really been the only name in that LSU offense, because usually the LSU has been known for really good running backs like Leonard Fournette, but now it's kind of Joe Burrow leading the charge. Again, no one really knew who this kid was when we started this year. It was all Jake Fromm, it was all Tua, and nobody really saw this coming for LSU.
Yeah, especially having the number one rank. And I think I'm number one. I'm thinking Clemson. I'm thinking Alabama. You know, we always entertain LSU, but nobody really. LSU, to me, is a lot like Georgia. Mm-hmm. They're always relevant. They're always in the top 10. They're always in the conversation. But at the end of the day, it's the Crimson Tide that's left as the last one standing at the end of the day.
Right.
You know, there are, you know, even I'm talking about, we're talking back in the day when LSU had Honey Badger and Les Miles. Mm-hmm. They're always relevant. But you just never expected them to get a job done. But now, you know, LSU is in a situation where they're like, hey, we ought to be taken seriously.
I don't think, well, with the, as I said, with the exception of Burrow, I mean, I don't think LSU really had the quarterback situation figured out.
Yeah.
And now they have, and now they have that quarterback, and they look like they are poised to dethrone Alabama, but as you said, Leon, they're going to have to prove it on the field in 2 weeks, because if there's one thing Nick Saban can do, it's take your premier marquee player out of action. Shut yep. him down. Oh, yeah. And right now he is feverishly looking ahead at Joe Burrow, saying what he can do in order to get him out of his rhythm. So you're going to see a very exotic blitz package coming at him in 2 weeks.
And they opened up a 2-liter bottle of you-know-what without their starting quarterback on Saturday.
Right.
Yeah, they did.
That's interesting to me in itself. That's making a real statement as far as the concern with Alabama. You know, though they're not number one right now, they're, you know, I think by way of, you know, Georgia consensus, people still look at them as being a team to beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so coming into today's action, coming out of the out of last week's action, Florida 4-1 in the East, Georgia 3-1, Missouri now 2-2. In South Carolina, 2-4. Tennessee picked up another win. They are 2-3. But Tennessee, again, too little too late for the Vols. Again, I think their fans' favorite refrain is wait till next year. Again, that second loss from Missouri pretty much dooms the Tigers. And, of course, in the West, Alabama, LSU, they are both undefeated. Arkansas has not gotten a win. They are the only team in the conference not to have a W. Mississippi State 1-4, Ole Miss 2-3, Texas A&M, Auburn, they are both 3-2. So, again, a four-team race, and it was the four that we thought. Turning over to the ACC, well, Daniel, this is a pretty big week for you because now it's the mm-hmm. countdown to that Florida State-Miami game. How do you see that looking?
It is. You know what? Both of these teams, they both pulled out very good wins this week. Of course, Florida State, I don't think they don't have a shot. In fact, no one in the division really has a shot at beating Clemson. I mean, Wake Forest might be the closest one to kind of steal an ACC championship bid for Clemson, but I don't see it happening. But Florida State, man, I saw that game yesterday, and they looked great. It was the best I've seen them look all season. The play calling by Browse was tremendous, and Miami's defense came to play against Pitt, a bit of an upset there. Here's the thing about the ACC. When you look at the Atlantic, of course, Clemson has played six ACC games already, and he's won all six, of course.
Right.
Wake Forest is 2-1, so they still got a lot of catching up to do, but they have not seen Wake Forest yet, if I'm not mistaken. So they still got to see Wake Forest, I think, this week, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it might be Boston College they see. But they still have to meet each other. But if you look at the bottom, that division is only separated by a game and a half. That's it. So Georgia Tech is 1-3, but Virginia is 3-2. So it's like, what do you go with that? Is there only a 1.5 game separates that entire division? So Miami could win. Virginia could lose, and Miami could be on top of that Coastal Division. So that's how close and that's how ugly that race has been over there. Even though I still think Virginia is the class of that division, I think it's theirs to lose. But, you know, we'll see. I think with Florida State and Miami, I kind of wanted this game to to end it, to end up this way. I don't think we've ever seen this rivalry where these two teams have been playing mediocre football and they meet each other. Normally, it's one team that has been more dominant than the other, or both teams have just been outstanding all season. But both of these teams need this victory, because if they don't, this could jeopardize them from going, from being bowl eligible. So big time game this week for both teams.
Right.
Of course, you know how I am. Go Noles. I'm go Noles all the way.
Actually, Daniel, looking at the schedule, Clemson is out of conference this week, playing the mighty Terriers of Wofford.
Oh, yeah, they got a cupcake game.
Yeah, they got a cupcake game this week, and which only makes sense considering they've played so much in the league. They got to, you know, get those other ones in. Yeah, Wake Forest hosts NC State, Virginia at North Carolina, Pitt at Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech at Notre Dame, and Boston College is at Syracuse this week.
When is that Clemson, Wake Forest game?
Let's see. It might not be till later. Yeah, it's November 16th.
Yeah.
It's November 16th.
November 16th. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Clemson's at NC
State. That will be Clemson's toughest test. Mm. Yeah. That will be Clemson's toughest test. I mean, being in all seriousness.
Well, Clemson,
Wake Forest is a better football team than what most people want to give them credit for. That will be a tough test for them.
Yeah. Well, Clemson. Let's see. Clemson only has two conference games left, Wake Forest and NC State, and I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and that's why I said it that will be Clemson's next toughest test. And luckily it's at home against Wake Forest. So, you know, they wouldn't have really anything to worry about in the next 3 weeks or so.
Okay. All right, so let's turn the page a little bit, and we're going to give Leon a chance to pound his chest a little bit, because his Chargers not kind of shaved the Bears a little bit today, 17-16. Good win for you guys, Leon, playing at Soldier Field. Leon. Oh, wait a minute. Well. Do we have Leon? Daniel? Do we have him?
Leon.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I just set you up.
Sorry about that.
I set you up, Leon. I was talking about those Chargers with that close victory over the Bears today at Soldier Field.
That game right there took a couple seconds off my life. Just watching it. Oh, my goodness. It's like we did everything we could possibly do to get that game away. Uh-huh. If you ask me, we've seen, on a positive note, we've seen Melvin Gordon score his first touchdown like in 8 years.
Okay.
You know, he had his first good run of the year. So I believe he finished out with a grand total of 31 yards for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but Phil Rivers, he did pretty decent in the passing game. Before the half was up, he definitely able to push the ball downfield. I've seen a lot of – I mean, it was one point in time. I mean, it was like a battle between the Bears and Chargers. Who's going to get the game away? It's like the Chargers were like, hey, you take it. The Bears were like, no, you take it. I mean, I've never seen it before in my life. The Bears had 17 plays on one drive inside the red zone and could not punch it in. I've never seen that. I see that, like, not on the pro level. I mean, Mike Trubisky, I mean, that's not how you get a new contract, if you ask me, the way he's playing.
No.
No.
And he was a number two pick. He was a number two pick.
Goodness.
The Bears could have had Deshaun Watson. And I don't know if you guys saw the game with the Raiders. I was referencing it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I did.
All right, Watson had this play where he gets a foot in the face, a foot in the eye,
yep,
spins out of it, throws a little bit of a wobbler with one eye, and finds his receiver in the end zone for the game-winning touchdown.
You forgot to add, John, that he was actually fixing his face mask while he was doing it.
Yeah, he was doing that.
He was either fixing his face mask or he was grabbing his eye or something like that.
Well, again,
I started playing real time because I have the NFL red zone, and I was like, oh my goodness, this guy is spectacular.
He is.
This guy is definitely sensational.
Yeah, to be able, but either way, I think there was a little blood in the eye because that cleat, or was the front part of the cleat, just found a perfect way inside his face mask to hit him in the eye. And he was trying to, I don't know whether he had something in the eye that he was trying to adjust, but yes. Also, the Houston Texans had a very bad news development for them in that game as well. J.J. Watt left at halftime. The results of a scan revealed a torn pectoral muscle. And once again, J.J. Watt out for the year for the Houston Texans.
And I think he's torn that pectoral muscle again. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's done that once before. And, you know, my heart just goes out to him. He's such a tremendous athlete, a great guy, one of the best pass rushers in the league. But the thing that has haunted J.J. is just like it's haunted Gronk and other guys in the league. Is just he can't stay healthy.
Right.
He can't give you 14 to 16 games a year, you know, and – each time it has hurt the Houston Texans because here's a team that is as talented as it gets. They have a decent defense. They have a decent pass rush. I think Whitney Mercilus is probably one of the most improved players of the year. Mm-hmm. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level the way that he's playing. But this Texans team, they're in a dogfight for the AFC South. And a tremendous dogfight for the AFC South because the Indianapolis Colts are just not going away. In fact, I think the Colts still lead the division.
Right.
But this team is, you know, they need J.J. Watt if they're going to go somewhere, if they're going to advance far into the playoffs. They need him. It'll be more than Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and Carlos Hyde and those guys. It'll be more than that. So that's my whole thing about the Texans. They're 5-3. The Colts are 5-2. The Colts are 5-2 without Andrew Luck. Astonishing to me.
I think Jacoby Brissett is the story, and how well he's performed in just very trying circumstances. Because he comes to Indianapolis, he thinks he's holding the clipboard for Andrew Luck. Instead, he's thrown into the fire almost immediately. Well, one thing about him is, you know, he's played teams like the Falcons. I don't think he's played the Saints yet. And
he hasn't. That's a Monday night game.
Okay, good.
And it hasn't came up yet.
And yeah, next week he's got Pittsburgh. I think the schedule's kind of helped him out a little bit, giving him a very good learning curve to get his feet wet, to get comfortable, to get into a rhythm as the starting quarterback. And I think that has helped him in terms of who he has played. I think he's played the Raiders as well. So that has helped them. And now I think the Texans go to London next, don't they? Don't they play Jacksonville in London? Do I have that right?
Yeah, next week, 9. Yes, you're correct. 9:00
Okay.
Next Sunday
morning.
And the guy from NFL Network will call that game.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting contest out there. And I know, Indianapolis has Pittsburgh, and I think they're the – aren't yeah, that might – yeah, so Indianapolis plays Pittsburgh, and again, 5-2 for the Colts. Great job for Jacoby Brissett. I'm not 100% sure if anyone really saw him doing very well. Got to give the coaching staff great credit, allowing him to play to his strengths, doing what he needs to be doing. And then there's the Falcons, guys. Another loss to the Seahawks, 27-20. They hit the bye week. A late comeback. Matt Schaub starts. It was Matt Ryan's first missed game since 2009, and it's just another example where it looks like the team has basically given up. There's only maybe five players you want to keep, but the rest of this roster deserves some dynamite, and I do believe that Dan Quinn is gone on Black Monday, maybe even sooner. The word from Arthur Blank is that he is going to stay with Dan Quinn, as the Falcons do hit their bye week. But boy, when they come up the bye week, they got the Saints, and that just might be ugly, because you know the Saints are going to take absolutely zero pity on the Falcons in this condition. Julio Jones had a great impassioned speech in the locker room. We thought maybe this would light the fire. It has not. The defense is just Grady Jarrett, and 10 other people. Did you see one of the touchdowns from the Seahawks today where they snapped a picture and it looked like 10 people were completely out of position for that? This is just a very big dumpster fire right now going on in Atlanta.
Embarrassing.
It is, and really, Dan Quinn, we've been kind of holding the benefit of the doubt, but now it's completely gone. The Falcons need to get into another direction in a hurry. And we mentioned this, or I mentioned this a little bit. Do you call up Jim Harbaugh? Who are you going to call in this situation? I would almost call Kyle Shanahan and say, okay, how much money will it take for you to leave San Francisco and come back here? Because really, once he left, all the offensive rhythm went with him.
It did.
Yeah. And go ahead, Dan.
No, you go ahead, Leon. You got it.
Yeah. Well, Kyle Shanahan, though, you know, someone has to take the blame for that Super Bowl debacle. He's not coming back.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. The politics demanded that someone take the blame, and it was Kyle Shanahan. Because that performance that he put on in the Super Bowl was just insane. I've never seen a worse, such a horrible management of the football. That reminded me of what happened with the Chargers and the Bears this week. In the two-minute drill, we promptly go 3-and-out and give the ball back to the Bears, who did everything they could to give the game to us, and we did everything to give the game to them. But with Kyle Shanahan, y'all, unfortunately, when the lights were brighter, he fell. And if I were Arthur Blank, I would go with John's first option. And that's, you want to get, I'll get Harbaugh on the phone yesterday.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, you know, we need you to do the same. Because, you know, since you can't get, since Kyle Shanahan brought the 49ers back to prominence, well, let's go get the man who actually benefited from the last time the 49ers were relevant.
Right.
Steve Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. He's a proven winner. You know, I think the 49ers only had one down season when he was there, and that would be the spark that the Falcons need to get themselves relevant again. Do you bring him in now? No. Now you definitely want to begin the season with him. And we're not millionaires,
right?
But even we can see that man just might get answered. So these guys get paid millions. And I'm pretty sure that Harbaugh will be on the hot seat. I don't think they're going to be Ohio State. I'm not going to lie to you. They're going to have a 3-loss season. And to Michigan, that is unacceptable. That's not what they brought him in for. And they're going to send him back to where he came from. So, you know, I think that'd be the best. And with Harbaugh's attitude and what he's known for, he gets in your faces. He's known to hold players accountable. That's what he's a culture changer. And that's the shot of adrenaline or the kick in the rear that the Atlanta Falcons need right now.
Well, the Atlanta Falcons made a move during the week. They traded Mohamed Sanu to the Patriots, and that was more of a salary cap relief move than anything else, because what a lot of people don't realize is that the Falcons they're hard up against the cap. They're going to have to make some really tough moves, tough decisions in the offseason to get room to either entice free agents or go after the draft picks. And now they have a second-round draft pick because of that Sanu trade. There's rumors that other people are on the trading block. Problem is they can't give Vic Beasley away. That is one thing that we're hearing. They're even throwing in coupons to Golden Corral. They still can't get any takers. They're basically saying, you don't have to pay him a dime. We'll take the rest of his contract. Still nobody wants him. And that is a definite fall from grace from the person who led the team in sacks a couple years ago.
Yeah, but still, John, this was management, and I'm a piggyback off Daniel. I know this is the way Daniel would think. Mm-hmm. If you got a situation right now where, as the Atlanta Falcons, you're pretty much disappointing everybody. Okay,
right.
Everybody's disappointed. What does the public want to see? The public wants to see a message being sent. By trading Mohamed Sanu, and like you just said, you just named his credentials. That man has credentials. Mm-hmm. He fell from grace. You're sending a message to the fan base that their ownership is invested in winning, and then you're sending a message to their locker room that, hey, this can happen. Don't say, if you guys want to tighten up, you will be next.
Right.
But you got to do that.
And I'm glad you said that, too, because that's going to lead me into my point. First off, as far as the new trade go, a lot of people, a lot of fans, rather, were, you know, in their feelings about trading off Muhammad Sanu. Listen, that's just to show that a lot of people don't watch baseball. What do we see every single year at the trade deadline for baseball? Contending teams go to bad teams to get good players.
Right.
To put them over the top.
Right.
That's what New England did.
And we don't see that too much. We don't see that too much.
We don't see that
in the NFL.
Yeah.
We never do.
We don't see that. And that's what the New England Patriots did. They went after a guy who has been probably one of the most reliable Falcons since he arrived here in Muhammad Sanu about 4 years ago. Right? He's been a very reliable kid. They tried to get Austin Hooper. A lot of people don't know that. They tried to get Austin Hooper, but the Falcons didn't want to let up because they're expecting to pay him some money at season's end. His contract is up, and they're expecting to throw some money at him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing about that. That should have took New England over, not just from winning the whole thing, but from possibly going undefeated. Now, I don't know how true that's going to be with them going to Baltimore next week, because that's where their first loss could come. But at the same time, that's what it is. And number two, John,
yeah,
it shouldn't be a hard decision. It shouldn't be a hard decision for the Falcons, because it's god awful that they're playing. Everybody should be up for the block.
Yes.
Everybody should be up on the trading block.
Right.
Like you said, with the exception of maybe five players,
right,
everybody should be held accountable for this.
Julio, Hooper,
mm-hmm,
Grady Jarrett,
yep,
and yep. Number five escapes me.
I want to say Devonta Freeman.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to. Yeah, that was that's probably where I was going.
Yeah.
Where I was leaning to. Oh no, I know who. Calvin Ridley.
There you go. Yeah. You keep the receiving corps. You keep those three guys. You keep Matt Ryan. Because at the end of the day, Matt Schaub threw for 460 yards, but it's the same thing we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
300 of those yards came in the second half.
Right.
So what's the difference? There is no difference.
There is no difference.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah,
he
looked good.
The Seahawks had their B team in. The Seahawks rested everybody.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
And listen, the Seahawks are no cupcake team. They're no cupcake team. That's not a cupcake defense. They're contending for a wild card spot. If not, well, I'm gonna say a wild card spot, because I'm telling you. That team out in San Francisco, if y'all haven't seen them today,
yes,
that team out in San Francisco is for real.
Mm-hmm.
They are for real. They are legit. That defense is legit. They're number one against the pass. They swarm you. Was that Nick Bosa? Yeah. Because you guys got Joey Bosa, right, Leon? You guys got Joey.
Yeah.
I can't remember which Bosa's that. But whatever it was, whichever Bosa it was, that Nick Bosa, three sacks and an interception today. He's single. Garoppolo looked outstanding today.
Guys, we got to touch on that.
He's out there doing the same.
Yeah. We got to touch on that, because this leads, this compounds your point on the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and what's going on with Favre, though the Falcons took a loss to a team that will be going to the playoffs. It's safe to say that Seattle will go to the playoffs this year. They might not win a division, but they will go to the playoffs. If they're, barring catastrophe. So, but it's not. That's not the point. The point is, the Falcons are now 1-7,
mm-hmm,
or 1-6.
That's
all at the end of the day. They're 1-7. So, at the end of the day, that's what people are concerned about. You know, they're a professional team. They're expected to rather compete and win. And reference to San Francisco. Granted, San Francisco 7-0. All right. San Francisco is on par to win a division.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco is on par to go to the playoffs and make a big splash. So now if you're the Patriots and you got a 48-year-old quarterback in Tom Brady, who is kind of up in the air if he's even going to come back next year. You know, Tom Brady, you know, they're on the way of going undefeated, potentially.
Potentially.
But then, you know, they're on the way to sweeping their division again.
Well,
like 20 years in a row.
Hard.
Right, right. You know, they have been the epitome of consistency, finishing less than 12-4 only two times in the past 19 years. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, as far as I remember, the last time they didn't go 12-4, that's the last time the Chargers beat them. That was back in 2009, when the Patriots had Matt Castle. Mm-hmm. But the point I'm trying to make is this: if you're Patriots management, then you're prided upon being, you know, free agency wizards. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about acquiring Josh Gordon, acquiring Mohamed Sanu, and et cetera. You let Jimmy Garoppolo go. And Jimmy Garoppolo, is, as we see, is a credible replacement, would have been a credible replacement for Tom Brady. And the ship would have kept on moving after Brady, long after Brady retires. Now, you got to pretty much, it's all about if Tom Brady's in the mood to come back next year. If, you know, if you guys want to the point where the Patriots are going to have to build them a new quarterback from scratch.
Okay.
If you're Patriots management, you know, are you? Is the right pawn hitting the forehead right now as you're looking at what's going on in San Francisco?
Well, they are going to need a new quarterback eventually, and whether or not it'll be this year or the next, we really can't tell. And I guess a lot of it will depend on what the Patriots do. But before we leave it there, guys, I want to mention one little thing. The Falcons are halfway through their schedule. They are 1-8. They still have to play all six of their divisional games, plus at San Francisco, home with Jacksonville. Now, with that slate, I'm thinking 4-12 for their final record. Now, last year they were in the similar position, but then they really messed up by going on a winning streak, falling from the 7-8-9 down to a 14-15-16. This season, I don't think that's going to happen simply because they're really high up right now. So I think with a 4-12 record, I think that's where they're going to wind up, and I think they're going to be maybe 7, maybe 8, maybe 6. Still, you're going to get a good impact player with that high draft pick next spring when we reconvene for the draft in downtown Las Vegas. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgo, alongside Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. We'll be on the road this Saturday, coming to you live from beautiful Waleska as Reinhardt tries for their another division crown against Cincinnati Christian, 1:30 for the kickoff, 1:15 for the pregame show. And guys, it's Sunday. The NBA has started. Let me tell you who are your undefeated teams. First up in the Western Conference, Denver, Dallas, Minnesota, San Antonio. They don't have a blemish. Atlanta, Philadelphia, Miami, they are undefeated and winless so far. Indiana, New York, Sacramento, New Orleans, they're 0-3. They're missing Zion. Memphis and Golden State. So, first of all, Leon, as our NBA expert, what has either surprised you? What have you expected in this opening weekend? Again, it's not that much of a sample, of a statistical sample, but still, something's got to have either impressed you, surprised you in the first slate of games.
Well, no, I'm not the one to get. I don't want to become prisoner of the moment. You know, like it is an 82-game season, mm-hmm. So I don't want to jump to a complete conclusion. But I'm not perfect. I don't like the way Golden State looked against the Clippers.
Oh,
I'll be honest with you.
Well, Golden State against Oklahoma. Did you see that? I mean,
yeah,
it was like
120-92.
It was like 70-32 at the half. I mean, Golden State 0-2, and I was so interested in the New Orleans 0-3 that I completely elided over that Golden State 0-2, and I wanted to come back on that. Now, I doubt that they are, in fact, pushing the panic button really early to do that, but still, what they did against the Thunder, they didn't even show a pulse in that game.
Oh, and players, hold on. Now, in the words of Reggie Miller, welcome to the NBA, Steve Kerr.
Yes.
you got a coach now.
Mm-hmm.
No Klay Thompson, no quasi All Star lineup, no more Kevin Durant. Can you really coach in this league? Now you have the defensive liability that is Seth Curry, and please believe this: Seth Curry is a marked man in NBA. We're talking about he was the only player to ever receive the MVP by unanimous decision.
Right.
And we're talking about this league has a rich tradition of legendary players that's never happened before. Mm-hmm. And people are a little salty about that. People were very salty about that. And now people are going to, I'm talking about NBA point guards are going to be going after Steph Curry like they caught him shoplifting. Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Every single game they're going to be giving to this man. Every single game. I got the Warriors to make the playoffs this year.
Really?
I doubt it. I know that's how I say it. I don't want to become prisoner of the moment, but I'm human.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they will. I think they will be the good team that will miss the playoffs this year. They will be the good team that will miss the playoffs this year, and this is going to have a tremendous impact on Steph Curry's legacy. Because people are going to say, wow, he was only able to sit back and accomplish those wonderful feats because he had people protecting him.
Okay.
He's out there exposed now. You have D'Angelo Russell, who is a perennial all-star player, but he's no Klay Thompson. Oh, he ain't no Klay Thompson. He's no Kevin Durant. They got a bunch of they have a bunch of no names on their team. It's going to get ugly for you guys this year. I promise you that.
Well, Golden State is on the back end of a back-to-back tomorrow at New Orleans, and then they go. Come home to play Phoenix. After two games, giving up 130.5 points after giving up about 141 to the Clippers. Woo!
Oh, defense liability.
Yeah, defense. They got to start liability. Playing defense.
Oh, and then, hold on. Speaking of the Clippers, mm-hmm. You know, the Clippers have all been crowned NBA champions after one game, right?
Right.
They went out there and beat the Lakers. Then they beat a hobble, well, pretty much a, you know, a roster challenge Golden State to coming out and lay the egg in Phoenix. That was interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is...
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Leon. Go ahead, and I'll go in.
Oh, no. It's on you.
So, here's my thing. I think it's really worldly. And sometimes, even in the NBA, an 82-game schedule is never really too early. Like the Phoenix loss, the Phoenix victory over the Clippers, that was just a night in the NBA. I mean, we're seeing the Heat pull off two good wins, and they pulled one of them off against a team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year in the Milwaukee Bucks. Without Jimmy Butler. But think about it this way. The Clippers, the first two meetings, they're putting up 120 and 141 without Paul George. So I find that to be – and they're putting up 125 even though it was in a losing effort. They put up 125 points without Paul George. Like, I mean, a lot of things are happening without him. Imagine what they would be when he comes back. Now, you know, I'll tell you somebody who's playing – out of their mind right now, and his name is Trae Young.
Oh God!
He is starting the show. 38 points again. This guy, if y'all don't believe in this guy, I'm posting my audience because I know my three guys. I know the last three guys who do a podcast believe in him, but believe in this guy, man. I don't know what you're watching. This kid is amazing, and because of that. The only thing that I can say about the NBA that I can actually be in my feelings about and say that it's never too early to say, the Atlanta Hawks, if he keeps playing the way he plays, if Trae Young plays the way he plays, the Atlanta Hawks are going to be a very, 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 very tough out in the playoffs. They're going to be a very tough out.
Yeah. I think in order for the Hawks to go far, the way they want you. I like the way Trae Young's playing. I like the fact he put up 39 points. I like the way he's doing what he's supposed to do. He's looking like the best point guard that the Hawks have ever had, in my opinion. But I'm going to need – he's going to
– Spud Webb, don't do anything. Don't do anything drastic, Spud Webb. We still love you.
Right. Exactly. You know, I like Mike Bibby. Yeah. I do. Well, we got to look at, you know, we like Doc Rivers was good. You know, but to compete, you know, you guys have to build. So that's saying a lot. But in order for the key to the Hawks going to making a major splash in the playoffs is that guy that the best power forward that you guys have ever had, bar none. And I'm saying this early in his career, John Collins.
Yeah.
That's going to be the key right there, because when you look at teams that when you look at teams that have like real good point guard play, there's only, if you look at it in the annals of NBA history, there's only been two guards that's ever led their team to the promised land as being the best player in the team, and that's arguably Steph Curry, arguably.
Mm-hmm.
And the legendary, not the regular, even though shout out to Isaiah Thomas, I believe he's given a raw deal in the NBA and everything, but I'm talking about the legendary Isaiah Thomas.
Well, Isaiah Thomas.
Other than that.
You say that Isaiah, and then yeah. We're going far afield. You say that Isaiah Thomas has been given a raw deal. Well, he's the only man in history to single-handedly ruin a league.
You talking about the regular Isaiah Thomas?
I'm talking about the regular Isaiah Thomas, the Piston Isaiah Thomas. Yes.
No.
Oh, you're talking about the other Isaiah Thomas. Okay.
The other guy.
Okay, the other guy.
Who's given a raw deal? I think he's given a raw deal by NBA.
Okay.
After the Celtics finished first in their first, like they had the best NBA record in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2017, you know, instead of paying him, they traded him to Cleveland, where he didn't fit in with LeBron.
Right.
Then he was given to the Lakers, he didn't fit in. Then he got sent to Denver, he didn't fit in. Now he's probably overseas. Raw deal.
Well,
the legendary Isaiah Thomas was the first point guard, little guy, to actually lead his team to the promised land and win multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the Hawks to ultimately be successful, we're going to need Trae Young to be less Russell Westbrook and more Chris Paulish.
Well, the Hawks,
you know,
the Hawks are going to have a very difficult stretch in the next few days. They get their first back-to-back of the season, home with Philadelphia and then at Miami.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Yeah, Trae Young's going to shine. He's going to do his thing. He's on guard. That young man, he can't be guarding the offensive zone. On the offensive side of the ball, he can't. Imagine when the Hawks play against the Warriors. He's going to take Steph Curry's lunch. He's going to take his lunch. I predict it. I guarantee you Trae Young will be going for 40 just to make a point.
Right.
Guaranteed. It's a regular season anyway. You can get away with that. You know, but one thing I was impressed, even though this team lost, was the fact that Derrick Rose dropped 30. That's 6 turnovers, but in a losing effort with the Detroit Pistons, Derrick Rose is still a factor on offense this league.
Right.
Which is a feel good story.
Yeah, it
for
is.
For me personally, because, you know, because it's a feel good story.
It is.
But I got to speak on my team, though. You don't mind.
Oh, I know that. Again, we're conference.
Yeah. Again,
we're conference calling here on The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Time is running short, so we're just going to have to give our little spiel for 60 seconds. Again, I mentioned a little bit earlier that Georgia State football is won their sixth game of the year. They are bowl eligible. Got a chance to maybe go 2-2 the next four games. They're at Louisiana Monroe, home with South Alabama and Appalachian State. And finally, at Georgia Southern, that Appalachian State game, they are undefeated. The Mountaineers do have a tough game this week against South Carolina. But, guys, What I want to point out before we go is that Georgia State's social media account is on point. These are the guys who put that billboard across from Georgia Tech saying that they were the best basketball team in the country. Well, they put out a tweet this morning about the transitive property of college football. And I've said this before. I know what it is, you know, the transitive property, because there's only 12 games. How do we judge teams against each other, teams that will never play each other? Well, we have what's called the transitive property of college football. And Georgia State put out a tweet. It says, Georgia State beats Tennessee, who beat South Carolina, who beat Georgia. Does that mean that Georgia State is now the best college football team in Georgia? Does that mean that Georgia State is better than Georgia? And if you adhere to the transitive property of college football, the answer would be yes. And, of course, people in the SEC did their predictably, shall we say, not quite unrestrained reactions. Even the fans from Tennessee wanted a rematch. Well, my point of view for that is, well, do you have another $1 million? Because again, it was $950,000 the last time, and if you have that, sure. So, guys, whoever is the Georgia State social media coordinator deserves a very big raise, because he or she has found the definite way to get under everybody's skin, and that is what you want in a social media coordinator. All right, who's next?
That's well said.
Who's next?
Well said.
I got one.
All right.
I got one. Mine's entitled, What You Gonna Do, What You Gonna Do. In the words of Stink Beaner from the legendary show Boondock, Season 1, 2005.
Yes, sir.
What are we gonna do? Well, you have a situation right now going on in New Orleans. You have a situation that's going on in Chicago. And to a lesser extent, you have a situation going on in Carolina. Quarterback situation, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with Terry Bridgewater? If you're the Saints, you're in a situation which we just mentioned earlier with the Patriots. You have a very capable quarterback, but he's like 49 years old. Drew Brees is the all-time leader in yards, period, ever in NFL, right?
Right.
Drew Brees is a living legend. Drew Brees is playing for the Chargers. I like to add that in for no reason. But Drew Brees has been playing in NFL since 2001. It's now 2019. During the time he was injured, the Saints went a convincing 5-0. Then which Drew Brees comes back today against a very capable Arizona Cardinals team and does what Drew Brees does, win in a very convincing fashion. You have a team like Chicago Bears who had 17 plays and one drive in the red zone. They're getting nothing from the quarterback. From a team that just all but try to give them the game in the Chargers, but, you know, I guess the Bears didn't win it. And then you have the Carolina Panthers, who pretty much ushered in San Francisco 7-0 in a very major way by allowing 50 points only putting up. How many points did the Carolina Panthers put up today? A grand total of 13.
Right.
There's going to be some quarterback movement at the end of this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
There will be quarterback movement. Will Terry Bridgewater wind up in Chicago? Will Cam Newton wind up in Chicago? Will Drew Brees be? And I'm looking at this. Will they Joe Montana Drew Brees and say thank you for a wonderful career, but it is a business.
Yep.
And when it comes time for you to go to the Hall of Fame, you can definitely use our. We'll definitely give you a good reference, but it is a business.
I hope you use our helmet. I hope you use our helmet in your bust.
You know, because he's proven he can still win. He's a proven winner.
Right.
You don't think he will?
No, not Drew Brees and what he's meant to that city. I don't think so. But go ahead.
I believe it, and I believe everything that you just said. But Joe Montana meant a lot to San Francisco. But they had a very capable. They had a, and Joe Montana's art was six rings and no. Yes, what, five rings? Yeah, five rings. Or, yeah, five or six. About five. I know at least five that I know of. About five.
I believe, yeah.
And no losses. And no losses.
Yeah.
And in 1994, they showed him the door, and he retired. Number 19 for the Chiefs. And the 49ers put Steve Young in the driver's seat, and they went on to beat my team, and the only time they ever went to the Super Bowl, by three touchdowns. I'll never forget that. If you're the management of New Orleans, if you're the management of Carolina, if you're the management of Chicago, it's a couple other quarterbacks, but those are the three marquee places. Tennessee just might be going back to draft. There's going to be a lot of open spots next year at the quarterback position. So it's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? That's my part.
Let me throw another name in there who's going to be a quarterback who will probably be on the move, Jameis Winston.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially his poor turnover, you know, throwing stuff there. He got to figure something out. They got to finish his game this year. That's not the way he's playing. The only way that he comes back to the Bucs next year is unless they franchise him because they couldn't find anybody in the draft. That's the only way he comes back. That's the way he's playing right now. And I'm looking at my guys, too. I'm looking at my guys. You know, Phil Rivers has been in the league since 2004. And we're having a less than impressive season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you want to do?
Right.
What's going on?
All right, Daniel, take it.
Oh, guys, that's actually very good that we did a segue into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because that's what my last few minutes is about. And actually, I'm going to give a hashtag salute to four guys. This is according, and I got this story from the Tampa Bay Times. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Levante David, Donovan Smith, Jameis Winston, and Mike Evans. Of course, you guys know Gerald McCoy is no longer with the team. He got cut after nine seasons with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So what these four guys decided to do, Gerald McCoy's son still lives in Tampa. They were among the four Buccaneers players who attended a high school football game at Tampa Catholic High School, which is where Gerald's son attends. Why did they attend this game? Because it was his senior night. And they actually felt like that they needed somebody there for him. They wanted somebody to be there for him. So all four of those guys decided to show up. And just in case his father couldn't make it. And the reason why his father couldn't make it is because he's with the Carolina Panthers now. Of course, he was cut after 9 years with the team. But his son still plays. Still lives in Tampa, and McCoy couldn't be there for his son on Friday night because his team was already in San Francisco for the game today against the 49ers. So his former teammate stepped up, and Gerald McCoy said this on his Instagram, quote, "My brothers stepped in for me. I truly love these cats. Family for life is bigger than football." And McCoy... And, of course, that just to show how much respect McCoy had in that locker room. He still holds that respect to this day. I want to give a shout-out to those four guys. Again, Levante David, Donovan Smith, Jameis Winston, and Mike Evans. They get a hashtag salute from me next week. I'm pulling out another letter, guys, and it's actually my half-season grades or awards. I'm going to go by the numbers.
Okay.
And letting people know who I think is for real, who I think is in the middle, and who I think is god-awful. So you'll hear that next week from me.
Can't wait for that, and hopefully we will be together in our studio, also known as Leon's Kitchen, but we'll also be at our home away from home on Saturday, 1:15 p.m. for our pregame show, as Reinhardt University attempts to clinch the Appalachian Division of the Mid-South Conference in a game with the Knights of Cincinnati Christian University. 1:30 for the kickoff, 1:15 for our pregame show. And again, Ryan, we'll know where Reinhardt stands in the NAIA polls. They'll be released tomorrow. Top 16 get in. Reinhardt right now at 17, so they got 3 weeks to get to move up one spot. We think they'll do it. Thank you so much for listening to the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. John Morgan with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. You can catch us dropping new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And again, if you've got a question, hit us up on Twitter. It's John_Morgo. But we're going to introduce some show-specific social media pages coming up in the next few weeks, or we'll get our own Twitter page, our own Facebook page, and our own YouTube channel. Looking forward to that, and we should also maybe do some new features like live recordings where you can catch us on Facebook and YouTube, and you'll be able to do that. Those will be coming out soon in the next month or two. Appreciate everyone for listening to us. Hope you'll be able to stay with us as we build our brand in year number two of our existence. Can't wait for all of that. So for everyone, for Leon, for Daniel, I'm John Morgo. Thanks so much for listening to the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Tell a friend, tell an enemy. We'll be with you next week. And till then, have a good night, everybody.